Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, The Ballad of Bogdan Bogdanovic. That's what I'm titling this one. It's certainly that's going to be top of mind as we discuss this Bucks offseason. A lot of twists and turns since we last chatted, some you know about. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. And on the other line is Bucks beat reporter Matt Velasquez. He has been following the many roster moves. The Bucks roster looks very, very different today than it did at the end of the 2019-2020 season. But there's a hitch. It's a hitch most people know about at this point. Bogdan Bogdanovic is not, after all, going to be joining the Bucks. He's going to be with the Atlanta Hawks at least signed him to an offer sheet. I don't even know if the Kings have had a chance to match yet or not in restricted free agency, but he's not going to be the Bucks on, I believe it was a week ago Monday, sign-and-trade was reported that the Bucks would be landing him shortly after it was reported that the Bucks would be also trading for Drew Holiday. That fell apart. Again, that's pretty common knowledge. So Matt, my first question is, I want to set up the premise, and I want to see if we all kind of agree with it, because based on, you patch all the reporting together, it sounds like this deal was agreed to in some strong framework. It gets reported 3 days before free agency is supposed to begin. People all around the NBA are upset by that, including teams that wanted to pursue Bogdan Bogdanovic themselves. The NBA office has opened up an investigation into tampering. That seems to have been the catalyzing factor that spooked this deal away from happening at all, that, you know, it seemed like it fell apart at that point. Maybe Bogdan Bogdanovic himself didn't want it. We don't know where that leak came from. We don't know if it came from the Bucks or the Kings or the player. We don't know. But that seems to have been the thing that tore this deal apart. I think that's a pretty important premise to accept, you know, for Bucks fans who want to point fingers, lay the blame at someone's feet. Do you think that's definitely what happened, or is there more to it than what we think?
I don't know if that's exactly what happened. I think that someone somewhere believed there was a framework or a solid framework of that deal. Whether that was someone with the Bucks or someone with the Kings or someone who got wind of it, I don't know. But someone had enough information, I would assume, or felt like they had enough information to go to Adrian Wojnarowski and say, hey, this is done. This is happening. I don't think Woj would just make this up out of whole cloth. There were a lot of reporters out there who had been, you know, writing about or tweeting about rumors of the Bucks sniffing around Bogdan Bogdanovic and that they were really actively pursuing him. So it's not like that was some type of like surprise information. I remember writing about that or, you know, in the summer, like they were interested like a while ago. I don't think this was very, very big news. They were interested. What was news was that Woj said it was done and that, you know, that was 3 days before free agency actually opened and anyone is actually allowed to talk to Bogdanovic or his representation. So if the plan was to agree upon it between the two teams and then take that to him later, then obviously it's not really good for anybody to let that out when he, you know, Bogdan's going to learn about that in the media and go, oh, hey, like, I don't want to do that. Like, why would I do that? Like, I'm not interested in doing it. Maybe he was interested, but had to back off because the NBA started a tampering investigation. I don't know. I've talked to people about this recently, and we might not learn exactly what happened until there's like a 30 for 30 on it. Because right now it doesn't benefit anyone involved to talk about the situation, at least publicly, while the NBA is investigating. Like, there's no reason anyone from the Bucks should be talking about it. There's no reason anyone from the Kings should be talking about it. Bogdanovic, I'm sure he doesn't want to pay any attention to that since he now has an offer sheet from the Hawks, and the only places he can go now are the Hawks or the Kings. So, you know, by the time you hear this, maybe we'll have a decision on that. The Kings had until Tuesday, which it is Tuesday now, to decide if they were going to match the offer sheet. I don't know that they would. That's a pretty hefty price to pay, especially with Buddy Hield on the books and just maxing De'Aaron Fox and all the other moves they've made. So it seems like they're destined for a split. But, I mean, it's the NBA and anything can happen. So the question of who leaked it, why they leaked it, exactly how much you know, conversation or who the conversations were with regarding a possible Bucks deal for Bogdanovic, all that's still kind of, you know, up in the air. But from the perspective of Bogdanovic through the reporting of Sam Amick from the Athletic, you know, he hadn't heard about that and he wasn't into it. At least that's what he said through that reporting. And so in that case, I mean, I guess it's positive for the Bucks. If he had never heard of it, that means that they couldn't have tampered. But it's regardless, it doesn't look good for the Bucks because that information got out there. It looked like they were, you know, triumphantly about to solidify their roster, two huge acquisitions, and you know, Giannis was going to stay, and everybody was going to be happy, and everything was going to be great. And then suddenly that all comes crumbling down. And whether that was actually a deal or not, whether it's actually going to happen or not, like publicly, it looks bad. It looks like they messed up. They did something wrong. That they, you know, even if they didn't leak it, they engaged in conversation with someone who did. That they don't have their, you know, their stuff in order. That they don't have their relationships in order. Like that, none of that's good. Like none of that looks good. But you know, I think it's still something that they can get over if they can do enough of free agency, you know, through other means, which I would argue that I believe that they did.
And we obviously are going to talk about that. We got to talk about this roster. If maybe, I don't know if this is true or if anyone's even saying this is possible. Maybe this winds up being a blessing in disguise and their roster actually could get better. I think that's definitely a point that's, I don't know if anyone is saying that, but that's something we'll discuss. But there is so much to talk about on the transactional thing, the mess that was made here over this. And, you know, you're sort of saying we probably won't know who's done this for a while. I think we actually will know eventually sort of what happened here. It's not going to happen anytime soon. For me, I try to sort of unpack the motivation for revealing this information. You know, when you leak information to a reporter, it's you're trying to build a relationship with the reporter, in this case, Adrian Wojnarowski, who is essentially the face of NBA league-wide reporting. You know, he's as good as it gets. He's if he's reporting it, something was going on. There was definitely something concrete in someone's mind that had happened with Bogdan Bogdanovic. You know, the Bucks have gotten in trouble before for tampering, very different situation. But when they mentioned that they were going to offer Giannis the Supermax before this last season, that was enough to get them in trouble. So you'd like to think that they would know better, that they would have that a little bit top of mind and not say anything. On the other hand, there are many people out there who think the Bucks probably were pretty excited about this deal and were trumpeting it before it was, you know, all the paperwork was in order, before it even could be in order. A lot of people have pointed out that Bogdanovich's agent has been caught up in some weird shenanigans in the past, that it could have maybe come from his side, but that would certainly fly in the face of the idea that Bogdanovich didn't hear about the deal, hadn't agreed to it. That would be weird. I don't know why in the world the Sacramento Kings would pipe this up and say it's happening. I mean, there doesn't really seem to be any advantage. I think if you are suspicious of the Bucks, you would say, well, they want to show Giannis Antetokounmpo what they're doing. They want him to sign the Supermax as soon as possible. So maybe they floated this idea out there and got it out there so that he could see that the Bucks were really trying to do something here. I mean, you could speculate all day long. I just don't know motivation-wise if somebody really has a good reason to give that information to Adrian Wojnarowski. It seems really stupid for anybody to have done that. And obviously the worst case is being realized here, where they're pursuing a tampering investigation. I do you have any idea? Like why would someone do this? What it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make a ton of sense. I think if it was someone from the Bucks, you would have to say they were puffing their chest and they were saying, hey, you know what? Like, look what we did. Like, let's, you know, I'm going to let you know. And maybe they were letting other people know, like, hey, like, look at what we did. Look what we're doing. Like, we're going to do this. It's going to happen. And maybe that the verbiage that they used may have been interpreted differently by different reporters. Maybe they might have said things to different reporters, or different reporters might have asked different questions that led to different discussions. Because like I said, like, other people were aware at the time that was something that was happening or could be happening. But no one else reported, like, it is happening. So, like, you wonder, like, how those words were said and to whom and like how they were interpreted. So, and like I said, if someone from the Bucks, you would assume it was like, you know, okay, puffing their chest saying, look what we did. I don't know John Horst to be that kind of guy. I mean, if I had to guess, I would guess it was higher up than him. if we were going to speculate, and this is all pure speculation, but you know, I'd be surprised if it was Horst directly, or someone in his front office, because it doesn't doesn't really fit the character as far as I can tell. But maybe, you know, maybe it wasn't anyone inside the Bucks, you know, front office or ownership. Maybe, you know, maybe they were letting this information go to some of their players, like, oh, hey, like, be aware you might get traded, or hey, be aware, guess who's coming. And maybe that suddenly got out through different channels. Maybe it's the Kings. I mean, the Kings aren't necessarily known for their organizational competence, right? Like, I don't think anyone looks at the Kings and go like, oh yeah, they got their house in order. Like, they know they know what's going on. It's like, so it could be the Kings just like, hey, like, we're gonna get off Bogdanovich, we're gonna get this young guy DiVincenzo who we like, and it's gonna give us some good options for the future. You know, seems like a pretty done deal from that perspective. Though I know that there's been reporting in the Sacramento Bee that, you know, I would assume would come from the front office saying there's no deal, there never was a deal. And like, is that kind of, you know, the truth, or is that
covering their tracks
and saying, oh no, this has never happened, this has never happened. You know, like, you never know. Like, there's just so much you know, smoke screening and stuff like that when it comes to free agency and all these things. So I think that we will learn some more. I jokingly said that we won't learn it all till 30 for 30. Maybe that's true, but I think with the NBA doing this investigation, like, if the investigation comes out that there is no tampering, then it means that maybe the two teams were engaged in this conversation and it never actually got to the agent or the player, or at least not directly, no direct conversations, in which case there was no tampering. So all of the ideas could be true that, okay, they didn't do anything wrong, but someone must have preemptively leaked it, right? Or there is tampering, and they were talking to Bogdanovich and his agent, and then they suddenly all had to backtrack, and it all fell apart, and there will be some sanctions. And I know a lot of people have been angry online about tampering and how the Bucks are getting hit with it, and, you know, it's not fair that only the Bucks are getting hit with tampering when other players sign like right at 5:01. It's like, yeah, okay, but that's true. Like, there must be some conversations happening that shouldn't be happening, you know, when you get to that point and people are signing immediately. But there's a big difference between doing it 3 days ahead of time and waiting until like 5:01 to announce that you've agreed to something, right? It's not saying that all those conversations happened like in that 1 minute, but at least it doesn't look terrible. Like, it looks bad when it's more than 72 hours before free agency starts and you already have a sign and trade that, you know, by definition cannot happen without the compliance of the player involved being reported as done. And so, you know, that's big. And then obviously, you know, people get upset about you know, LeBron James drawing Anthony Davis to LA and spending a whole year basically tampering. But the NBA doesn't have any rules about player-to-player tampering. And if both players are represented by the same agent, that agent is allowed to talk to that player. And they're allowed to have whatever conversations they want. None of that is tampering. And it may be icky. And it may be something you don't like. And it may be something that feels against the rules. It feels unfair. But it is not explicitly against the rules. And I don't know how the NBA could ever do anything to make that a rule. You can't say, hey, players, you can't talk to other players and like recruit them to your team. It's like, get out of here. Like, if a couple guys, you know, played together in college or are from the same hometown or, you know, from the same area, they play together, they work out together in the off season and they're friends, or they play for Team USA or Team Greece or whatever team, you know, in the Olympics, they're going to talk because they're human beings who are friends. And if they want to play together, you know, the NBA is structured as such that, you know, a lot of guys who want to play together, you know, if they're good enough, if they're stars, teams will figure out how to make that happen. You know, we saw that with Kawhi and Paul George. You know, we've seen that with all the, you know, Chris Paul and James Harden and Russell Westbrook and James Harden and, you know, all these different guys who have, you know, Kyrie and KD. You know, we've seen that a whole bunch of times. Guys are going to play together if they want to play together and they're really, really, really good. Because, you know, teams are going to make it happen because the benefit is just so great. So, yes, like, tampering is an issue in the NBA. It's not always pretty. If there were any teams, literally any teams, it could be the Lakers and the Knicks. It could be, you know, the biggest teams, the biggest names, the Celtics, and the Sixers and the Warriors, any of them, if they are actively, if 3 days before free agency starts, they had announced some, or there's a report of they of them doing something that is not allowed until free agency starts, I fully believe there would be an investigation into any of those teams, because, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, the league has to take note of, because it is like so far beyond the scope of the rules. And they, that may not be cool. That may not be fun. Like, you may not like that as a Bucks fan, and I totally understand that. But just from the optics of it, like, if the league doesn't investigate that, then what are they even doing?
Yeah, those are very important points. And it's true that some of the rules are basically decorum. You know, we all know the players talk to each other. We'd be naive to think when LeBron James is courting superstars that management isn't aware what he's doing or even giving its blessing to what he's doing. We know that this stuff goes on. It is true. But it's also important to note that in September of 2019, the league office really upped the fines for tampering. I mean, they're trying to get serious about it. And to see something 3 days before free agency starts is a, like you said, that's a slap in the face to the league. And yes, it stinks that there are no investigations into big market teams. And it feels like Milwaukee, which is doing everything it can to keep its superstar in the league, when perceived or otherwise, there are forces that are working against a small market, keeping its superstar, you know, superstar at home. At least that's what a lot of people will tell you. Maybe not contractually, but just in general, that you just can't completely, you know, completely overlook the rules and just say, well, we've got a deal in place, you know, come after us for tampering or whatever. Like, it was too obvious. They needed to optics needed to be preserved to a degree here. And so that's why the Bucks, a lot of people saying being made an example of, maybe, but this is the only example out there of teams, you know, involved on the management level, presumably having some sort of deal in place with a player. That is a problem. As far as what penalties they could face, a lot's been floated. I think if it's a financial penalty, fans will just shrug it off. That's fine. The deal itself being torpedoed would seem to be the punishment that fans feel has sort of been levied against the Bucks organization, whether or not that's right. What about draft picks, though? Could this team lose draft? I don't know how many first-round draft picks they have to their name for the next generation, but could they conceivably lose a draft pick over this?
Oh yeah, it's conceivable. I mean, if they can pick, you know, were complicit in a tampering violation, and again, I reiterate, the Kings can also tamper. So like, it doesn't mean that the Bucks tampered or the Kings tampered or both or neither. It could be any of those combinations, right? Like, the Kings are also not allowed to talk to Bogdanovich, even though he's their own free agent. He is a restricted free agent, but the window for negotiations was not active at the time that was reported. So he, you know, they could also have tampered. So the NBA has to decide if both teams tampered, if one team tampered, or if none of them did. And so the rules are pretty stiff. Like, they could be fined, I think, up to like $5 million. They could be docked draft picks. And the Bucks, for all the trades that they've made, they still have three of their next four first round draft picks. I think that's important to note. A lot of the draft picks that they're sending are in the future, but they have their 2021 first round draft pick. Their 2022 first round draft pick is going to Cleveland from the George Hill deal, you know, a couple years ago. Their 2023 first round draft pick is still theirs. And in 2024, they have a pick swap with the Pelicans. So they will not lose a pick, but if their pick is better than the Pelicans pick, they'll change places. So they'll still have a first round pick. It's not until 2025 and 2027 that they're actually giving the Pelicans picks. So I think that bears mentioning. So they can be docked picks. They do have picks to be docked. You know, according to the Stepien rule, you can't trade picks in back-to-back years. But I don't think there's any rule against the NBA taking your pick if you've committed a violation. Those are things that can happen. And the league will figure that out. I mean, that is what their job is. Their job is to make sure that everybody's abiding by the rules. And I know a lot of people have pointed out, like, oh, look at all the teams that are like tampering with Giannis over the years. People who have said things. Yes, people have said things, and they have been fined. You know, when Magic Johnson was with the Lakers, he just said Giannis was great, and he hopes he brings the championship to Milwaukee, and blah, 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 blah. And he got fined. Like, the NBA does fine teams and executives from big markets, and even when they talk about Giannis. And yes, teams are lining up and organizing their cap to try and get Giannis next summer. Of course they are. Does every team want Giannis? Yes, they do. Like, does every team want LeBron? Sure they do. Like, does every team want Steph Curry? You know, you bet they do. So, like, them doing those things and, you know, creating situations where they can get Giannis and, you know, trying to line themselves up, like, I don't think that's tampering. If people are talking to him behind the scenes or doing anything else like that, like, yes, that is tampering. And any such instance should be investigated by the league if it is brought to their attention. So, you know, it's a very kind of murky situation. Like, it's hard. Is the league going to punish every single team that announces at 5:01 at free agency that they've agreed to something? No. Like, that just seems heavy-handed. But like I said, when it's 3 days early, they're going to at least take a look and say, hey, explain this.
Yeah, I actually think we didn't see as much 5:01 this year as we have in past years. I thought maybe the Bogdanovich situation had scared some teams away from just going all in free agency, obviously. For the most part, sort of transpired in entirety over the weekend, but it was, there was at least a little bit of a pause I perceived, right or wrong, just a little bit of a Bogdanovich pause, if you will, to keep the NBA from the front door of some of these teams, maybe.
Yeah, I was fully convinced that, like, once free agency opened, I thought, okay, the Bucks aren't going to do anything for hours, and I was right.
Right.
Like, they didn't do anything for the longest time, and I'm sitting there watching the transactions, watching my computer, watching my phone, and it's like, okay, you know what? They got enough heat on them already. Even if they had something, you know, ready to go, they're not telling anybody for a while. And they're telling whoever the player is, hey, if your agent or if you let somebody know, like, that this is happening, that we made an agreement, it's off. Like, we're not doing it.
Yeah, and obviously everything's being done here through the lens of Giannis's Supermax situation, his extension situation, and I gotta admit, in the back of my mind, I thought Sunday the 22nd, the first day he's eligible to sign that he actually would. I really thought that might happen, but once the Bogdanovich thing went down, because remember the Bucks can't be talking Supermax before Friday with Giannis either. Suddenly I thought maybe the Bucks they're not going to risk that deal, which maybe they already have with the Bogdanovich situation. I think that's worth talking about, but that deal is going to wait some time. And, you know, like we've said, there's no real rush for Giannis. Maybe it waits until, you know, December, maybe it waits until the following offseason. He doesn't need to sign that contract right now. I still thought maybe that's where we were headed with the team now constructed. And we'll talk about these free agents. The team is probably better than they were last year when they were, again, the best team in the Eastern Conference in the regular season. Do you think that they have done enough? I mean, that's an easy question to ask. We obviously don't know. We can't get into Giannis's head. We don't really know what he wants or what he expected. But it's easy for a Bucks fan to be like, they had this incredible starting five. It seemed like an obvious situation that Giannis would want to come back to, and now that's not there anymore because Bogdanovich is gone. They may still have the better overall team. I guess, I don't know. Does it change your perception of what's going to happen with Giannis at all, or is this still kind of where we were before free agency started?
Yeah, so I've been pumping the brakes on people expecting him to sign even the morning after the Bogdanovich stuff. And that's one of the first things I wrote was, you know, hey, like, all this looks really great, you know, and should we expect Giannis to sign? What's he going to do? Because obviously that's the most important thing in all of this. And I thought, okay, he can sign, but he doesn't have to. Like, there is no rule. There's no push for him to sign. He still has all the leverage. He can decide. He can wait and see. Like, so the Supermax is on the table from now until December 21st. If he doesn't sign it then, it goes off the table for the duration of the season, and he cannot be extended during the season. After the season, the Bucks can offer him literally the same deal in free agency. And every team, if he goes into unrestricted free agency, can offer him the league max, not the super max, not the, you know, the amount or number of years that the Bucks can. But they can offer him, every team can offer him the same contract as long as they have cap space to do it, or can convince the Bucks to do a sign and trade or whatever. So he is going to get paid no matter what. He is going to get max money, max years, whatever contract he wants. He's going to get it because he's Giannis Antetokounmpo. And every team wants him, as we've already established. And if you look at Kevin Durant last summer, he tore his Achilles 3 weeks before free agency and still got the bag. He still got 4 years, $164 million from the Nets, and didn't play at all last year. And they have no promise that he'll be the same player now that he was then. But they paid the money because he's Kevin Durant. And if you can have, you know, all of Kevin Durant, or even like 85% of Kevin Durant for a few years, that's awesome. And you should do it. And so the same will be true for Giannis. I hope that there is never a situation where he experiences a long-term injury, even small injuries. I hope he never gets injured. I hope he is in perfect health for the rest of his days. But if he does get injured, he will still get paid, and his career will still be, you know, set. His family will be set. He will make all the money. So like, he is under no obligation to sign. Even if the Bucks made all the right moves and everyone was saying this is the best offseason any team has had, he still doesn't have to sign. He doesn't have to reward them for having a great offseason. His goal is to win championships. And so he could wait to see how does this group actually work. On paper, it may look really good. But how do we actually fit? And how far do we go? And is it good enough to make a title run, to win a championship? Because if it is, then I think that his odds would be really great to sign. And I say all of that, you know, obviously not knowing what Giannis is going to do. He can come back from Greece. I'm sure the Bucks know when he's coming back. You know, they have, I think Vin Baker was with him, and I saw a video that Giannis posted on Monday where Josh Oppenheimer is with him. They're working out, they're doing stuff in Greece. I'm sure they know when they're coming back. You know, training camp opens December 1st. We got a week till training camp, folks. And so they're going to be coming back at some point soon. So I think they're just waiting for when he comes back. You know, is he prepared to sign? Is he going to sign? You know, what is his plan going to be? Maybe they know already. Maybe he's already told them yes or no. Either way, but we all just have to wait until something happens. And you know, otherwise, when training camp opens and media is allowed to talk to him, that's going to be the first question. Giannis, are you going to sign a Supermax? Like, he will be asked about it often. So I'm sure he'll preemptively get some kind of messaging out there, whether he signs it or not. And you know, we'll have to see. We're all just kind of in wait and see mode. And unless you're Giannis or his family, in which case you probably know. And if you'd like to tell us, if you're listening to this podcast, please feel free to reach out.
Come on the podcast if you are a Bucks.
Yes. Giannis, if you want to come on the podcast, tell everybody what you're going to do. By all means, open invitation.
Yes, maybe Liam. If you want to come on the podcast, you're welcome to do so as well.
I would love to have Liam as a source.
Absolutely. Someday, maybe. I feel like Giannis is trolling us all. He's posted a lot of tweets in the last couple days, some fleets on Twitter, just workout videos or like what's going on in Greece. And I'm just like, he knows that every time he posts something, millions of people are paying attention to that information because we are now in the window where he could say, oh yeah, by the way, I'm staying in Milwaukee for the rest of my career, for the next 5 years at least.
I mean, imagine having the power to have an audience of like thousands or millions to hear you sing Holy in your car. Like, what a world.
You can't tell me for 1 second that he didn't know what he was doing there. That was like, you know, that was villainous by any means, but he's just like, everybody wants to know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna sing Holy in my car and see, you know?
And everyone's gonna watch, and I'm gonna just cruise around Greece and live my best life. I don't begrudge him at all.
No, absolutely. That's pretty good. A lot of new faces. One additional face that was here last year, Pat Connaughton, re-signs with the Bucks in what might be another debacle. It's unclear. There's some reporting from John Hollinger and others that the initial situation here was that they expected to bring in Connaughton for one more year plus a player option year, a second year. But because they wanted to use what's called his early bird rights, and I know we're threatening to get deep into the minutia of the salary cap situation, exceptions, various contract things, and that can get pretty sticky. But long story short, the rules of what they wanted to use on Pat Connaughton didn't indicate that they could give him an option year. It had to be a guaranteed year. So they went back to Pat Connaughton, said, we might have screwed this up. Can we try this again? Wound up with a 3-year deal, which ultimately might have hamstrung some other decisions, like maybe even kept them a player short on the 15-man roster because they don't literally have the money where they are allowed to spend over the hard cap that they have given themselves by virtue of some of these other deals. So give me anything that the layman can understand about what happened here. If the Bucks in fact screwed this up, or there's more to the story, or stuff we don't know yet. How are you looking at this whole thing?
Well, I mean, the Bucks could have screwed this up, but they. I also don't think we have enough information to totally know if they screwed it up or not. I don't think that they are an incompetent like front office. I don't think that. I think yes, like they have missed out on certain opportunities in the past, but I don't think that they're just like grossly incompetent and don't know understand the cap as much as a bunch of people on Twitter. So I'm hesitant to throw them under the bus. But what it seems like is, I mean, and it seems to me like all the reporting that got out there came via Connaughton's agent, because at some point, Adrian Wojnarowski, like, you know, he's been doing this thing, and Shams has been doing this thing where I think it's kind of new this year, but they are like making sure to include the agent's name and their agency when like reporting all this stuff, because you know the agent wants that out there. Like, it's like, okay, I'll give you this information, but make sure my agency and my name and my Twitter handle are in this report so that everybody knows that, like, I am great at doing deals and my agency makes money. You know what I mean? So, like, and all that's getting out there, right? I mean, Jeff Schwartz, like, his name is, like, in the tweets. Like, you know, that this is the money that Connaughton's getting. These are the years. Like, he's kind of putting a name to it. And, you know, so the question is, like, okay, was that deal done? Because, like, I know from my reporting that, like, that it wasn't done. It was being worked on at the time that it was reported as done. So, like, okay, like, was that done or was it not done? Like, was that the agreement or was not the agreement? Were there things that changed after that initial conversation? Like, hey, we're planning on bringing you back for 2 years, $8.3 million. We have this conversation right now. Let's tentatively agree to that. But then maybe things changed after the fact and it wasn't totally done. And they're like, it's not like they had to go back hat in hand and be like, oh, we messed up. We're so sorry. Will you help us? Like, I don't know if that's true. It could be true. It could be what happened. But it could also be, okay, you know what? We were fluid in these discussions. These were the initial parameters. Now we have something else that changed. We've tried to call other teams to try and work out sign and trades and do things under the cap. They didn't want to help us, because I know that, you know, a lot of people mentioned John Hollinger's report in The Athletic about, oh, here are all the things the Bucks could have done better with their cap, and they could have tied this, they could have done a sign and trade for Augustine, they could have done this, that, and the other thing. It's like every other team doesn't have to help you clear your cap. Every other team doesn't have to, like, just agree to do all these things. Like, it's not, you know, you should just do all these things. You're not just the GM in 2K and everything has to work out perfectly. There could be machinations behind the scenes. You know, it could be that DJ Augustine, like, you know, if you sign him to a little bit less than you could stand it. What if he didn't want to sign for less? Maybe he had a deal somewhere else where they said, hey, we'll pay him, you know, X amount. And he said, all right, Bucks, I'll go to you. But you have to hit that number or go higher than that number. Right? Like, we don't know what the conversations are like. So saying, oh, they should have just done this or that, I think is a little simplistic without knowing all of the things that actually did happen. And maybe Hollinger knows more. Maybe he knows some of the things that happen behind the scenes and is speaking from a position of strength. But it didn't come off that way to me. It came off as him saying, oh, here's all the things you could have done. Why didn't they do these things? Not that they didn't try them at all. If that makes sense. And so maybe Pat didn't want to be there for 3 years. Maybe he only wanted to be there for one with a player option for the next year and open himself up for a bigger payday in the future. And so maybe they said, you know what, maybe we'll give you a little bit more now in order to convince you to do 3 years. And we still don't know if all 3 years are guaranteed or if there are any options on them. I remember this being like a big sticking point with Ersan's deal a few years ago, where people were like, oh my gosh, three years, $21 million, like that's huge. Like, why would you give him that? And when it turns out, like, if the Bogdanovich trade had happened, having Ersan's non-guaranteed third year at the amount that it was would have actually facilitated that trade, right? Like, it could have actually been useful. And in the end, like, waiving him this year, like, some people thought, oh, like, don't waive him, like, use his salary later for a trade. But if you keep him at $7 million, maybe then you don't get other guys. Maybe you don't have enough space because they're so hard pressed against the hard cap that you just can't afford certain players. And would you rather have other players or Ersan? And I don't think they wanted Ersan. I think that, you know, they had decided he was done contributing. He barely played in the playoffs last year. Having him on your roster just for the possibility of a future trade doesn't seem like all that great of an idea, especially if you've canvassed the league, you've talked to other GMs, and they don't think Ersan's very good either. They don't think he's worth $7 million either. So you know, you have to be able to make those decisions, and not all of them are going to be right. And not all of them are going to be right in the moment, but might be good later. Like as I wrote in a story on jsonline.com, Pat Connaughton's deal, I think it's an overpay. I don't think he's 3-16 for the deal he got and for the production he's had. But could there be a silver lining that maybe mid-season, if they're looking for a trade and they're looking to match salaries, like that they actually have people who they can put in a trade? They have DJ Wilson, who's making like $4.5 million. They have Pat Connaughton, who'll be making about $5 million. Like, if you can turn those two guys into somebody else, you know, maybe you know, it's worth it. Maybe it's good to be able to have that opportunity down the road. Like I know we lamented, or Bucks fans lamented in the past, that they didn't have salaries to trade. They didn't have enough money to match, to build up, you know, contracts to make any deals. Well, now they have a few. So, you know, if you want to be able to do that, if you want to find a way to improve the team at a later date when, you know, maybe some teams that you thought were going to be contenders aren't and starting to sell off. Maybe some teams want to try and open up cap space for Giannis, right? Like maybe he doesn't sign a Supermax. Seems like, oh, you know, let's open up some cap space. And the Bucks are like, well, we'll try to just expiring contract for one of your better players. We'll try and convince Giannis to stay by winning using the player that you have. So there are a lot of different things to figure out. I would hesitate to say the Bucks fully messed up or fully incompetent in the content situation. The door is still open for that all to be the case. They could have definitely messed up, and they could definitely have displayed some incompetence or made a mistake in that scenario. I just don't have enough, you know, of the details to necessarily convict them of that.
So this is maybe a really stupid question. I haven't really unpacked it yet, but referring to what you're saying here, if yes, they have contracts to trade, but the idea of doing that to get a better player back, maybe DJ Wilson and Pat Connaughton are among the players going in another direction in a midseason trade. But there would also need to be some sort of asset, namely draft capital, that would be going in that direction for a team to be willing to give up one of their better players. The Bucks do have some of that, as you mentioned, in the next couple of years, but their inventory isn't exactly stocking, you know, stacked on the shelves. So would the Bucks? I mean, I don't see a way that they could move those contracts without including some draft compensation. So would that be a problem for them if they wanted to make a midseason tweak?
It might be. I mean, maybe at that point you'd have to trade Dante DiVincenzo and have, you know, a young asset who maybe isn't draft compensation, but whatever team that gets him would get him for, you know, the rest of this year and all of next year, and have his restricted, you know, rights as a free agent. You know, if you include DiVincenzo and Connaughton together, I think it's like 7 million or somewhere in the 7-8 million ballpark. You know, maybe teams would be interested in that. Maybe that'll get you a player that could be an upgrade. You know, there are just a bunch of different options. I'm not sure exactly which one's going to be best. And obviously it'll all still be hard as they navigate under the hard cap. We've mentioned it a few times, you know, because they used more than the taxpayer mid-level exception. They used their biannual exception by all appearances, that they're going to be hard capped at $138.9 million. They cannot go over that for any reason. And one further limiting factor is that Drew Holiday has a bunch of like unlikely incentives in his contract that I think it's a little bit over $4 million in incentives. And you have to account for that. You have to account for him hitting all of those incentives in staying under the hard cap, because you can't go over for any reason, including unlikely, you know, incentives. And so you have to stay that distance below the hard cap in order to not go over. And maybe there, some of those incentives are tied to certain things, that like maybe they're tied to an all-star appearance. If it doesn't make the all-star team, maybe that goes away, and that later in the season will open up more space under the hard cap for them to you know, for them to bring on somebody as a free agent during buyout season, or maybe one of those incentives is tied to him playing a certain number of games, and maybe he gets to a point in the season where he won't play that number of games. And so, okay, now that frees up space. I don't exactly know how that works, but they're going to have to, you know, manage that all year. And like right now, like if you include those unlikely incentives, like by my estimation, they have less than $1 million under the hard cap. And it may be even less than that. based on how all these contracts are structured and how it all shakes out. So they do not have much room to work with, and maybe they'll have enough space later in the season to get somebody, as I mentioned, during buyout season. But in any trade, they're going to have to make sure that they're either exactly matching money and number of contracts, or they're going to, you know, be, you know, acquiring less money than they sent out, you know, because another part of this too is that you have to have an average, I think, of like 14 players on your roster over a given number of seasons. And so they're going to have to keep at least 14 on the roster pretty much all year. I think there may be a feasible situation that they can go down to 13 players on their roster. But I mean, that's getting like way deep in the weeds with all this. The long and short of it is they're going to have to really structure their moves and manage their moves to make sure they're staying under the hard cap. They're keeping enough players in the roster and doing a trade that's going to be a needle that they'll have to thread if they do a trade down the, you know, down the line.
Okay, so let's finally, 40 minutes into this, talk about some of the new faces that the Bucks have gotten in free agency. The reason we haven't spent a lot of time on it is we've talked about Jrue Holiday at length on our last podcast, and a lot of these guys, I think it's safe to call them depth to a degree. I mean, you might certainly get some starts out of guys like Bobby Portis, Torrey Craig, Bryn Forbes, and DJ Augustine. For the most part, we're talking about guys who are going to be off the bench, but some talented players. I mean, we mentioned DJ Augustine on the last podcast, saw him in the first round of the playoffs. Nice, capable veteran, you know, entering the latter stages of his career, but veteran shooting option, can handle the basketball, of course. All these guys can shoot. And Bobby Portis provides that edge that we talked about, you know, the a la Markieff Morris, you know, sort of Marcus Smart vein, maybe a little bit unpredictable is kind of how he's looked at. But 25, he's a younger guy, and he could certainly be the type of person, the enforcer type that you would want if you have a superstar on the floor. Torrey Craig, Bryn Forbes, I imagine neither one of those guys are household names for most people, but they can shoot. It sounds like they can defend. So it seems like the Bucks did ultimately get better. Now, I don't know if anyone's out there, like I said at the beginning, arguing that this team is better as constructed now than it would have been if it had just made those moves for Holiday and Bogdanovich alone, understanding that a couple more moves would have been made then in the aftermath of that. But it does sound like they're better. That's good news for a team that was top dog in the East the last two seasons. Other teams got better too. I don't know if you see the Bucks now are the team to beat in the East, but just in general, I mean, give me your thoughts on where this roster stands.
Well, I mean, I've seen arguments both ways, that they're better, that they're worse. I don't think that they are like much better or much worse. I think they are definitely like in a much smaller range. They're pretty close to what they were last year, but I think the biggest difference is they appear to have a more competent, more playoff ready roster, maybe a shorter rotation, which I'm sure a lot of Bucks fans will be excited about, considering that Bud would still go 10 or 11 deep in the playoffs. You know, they don't have as many upper tier options. But the options that they have, I mean, I think you would be confident in Giannis in a playoff series. I think you'd be confident in Chris Middleton in a playoff series. I think that you'd be confident in Jrue Holiday in a playoff series, where I don't think anyone was ever confident in Eric Bledsoe in a playoff series. I think that it gets a little shaky after that. We're like, okay, if Dante DiVincenzo was the shooting guard instead of Wesley Matthews, do you feel better about that or worse? I think people probably feel a bit worse. You know, Dante could do some different things, but he's not as staunch of a defender as Wes, and hasn't shot the ball as well as Wes. But he is a different kind of defender, where he is, you know, going to be using his athleticism to get rebounds, get steals and deflections, and kind of make things happen. He didn't have a great playoffs. He didn't have a great bubble at all last year, but I think that he did to kind of come on late and have a pretty good performance or good performances in the last few games in the Heat series. But you know, that was basically his first season. So can he improve from his first full season and his first playoff experience to this year? I think that there's a pretty decent likelihood that he can. But I still think that he's still giving up some stuff, and I would be less confident in him than Wesley Matthews. I think Brook Lopez is Brook Lopez. And the question is, are we going to get Brook, who was, you know, a 30% three-point shooter all of last season, or we're going to get the Brook who in the bubble was a much better scorer, offensive presence, and still a strong defender. I'm not sure, but if he can be, you know, A minus B plus Brooke Lopez at the very least, I think that's very good and someone who you can count on. Not that he necessarily fits in every matchup. I think there are still certain matchups that he would struggle in or at least have more challenges in, you know, but there's that possibility. Then you look at the bench and I think that, you know, the DJ Augustine is fairly close as a comp to George Hill. He's obviously giving up a lot of size. So he's going to give up more on the defensive end, but offensively he can shoot the ball. He can create plays. He doesn't make too many mistakes. He can run the pick and roll. He can run that second unit well. You can even play him in the starting unit, maybe to minimize his defensive, you know, inefficiencies or inadequacies. If you go with a lineup where Drew Holiday is the shooting guard and you're playing DJ Augustine at the one, by having four, you know, plus defenders in Holiday, Giannis, Middleton and Lopez on the court with Augustine, maybe that covers up some of his inadequacies. There'll definitely be that option over the course of time. I think Bryn Forbes and Torrey Craig are kind of interesting because Forbes is a better three-point shooter than most people the Bucks had last year. I mean, he's a 40% three-point shooter 2 years ago in the playoffs in a seven-game kind of like knockdown drag-out series. I think it was against the Nuggets. He shot 48% from three. Like, it is a proven three-point shooter in clutch, difficult playoff situations. You know, so that, I think that's something that if you're a Bucks fan, you'd like to see, you'd like to hear, because this, so often the Bucks have just absolutely struggled from three-point range, and guys who were good shooters fell apart in the playoffs. Well, this guy in the playoffs and the regular season has been really good. Now, he's kind of in the Wes Matthews vein where he's not creating very much. He doesn't have the ball in his hands very much. He doesn't penetrate all that much. Like, he's just going to shoot threes. And we've seen in the Bucks system that can work. You can be a serviceable player just doing that, especially if you hit him. Defensively, you know, he's not close to what Wes is. You know, he's somebody who, if you can play him, you know, benchman, if he's coming off your bench, I mean, he was a starter in San Antonio the past 2 years, but if you can have him come off your bench for 18 to 22 minutes a game, I think he could be really effective. You know, Torrey Craig is the opposite of him, probably similar minutes, but the opposite in the sense that he is not an offensive player, basically. He's a very streaky, low percentage three-point shooter, like I think like 32%. He's not going to do too much in terms of creating shots or making plays. You know, he's a 6'7" wing who, you know, he's going to score inside sometimes. He's going to make maybe a couple jumpers, get to the hoop. You know, maybe he'll, you know, catch fire from three one night and then brick a bunch the next. But defensively, I mean, I don't think you can find a better value than Torrey Craig. You know, getting him for at the minimum, which is what I expect the Bucks got him at because of their situation with the hard cap. That I think that's a steal. I mean, a lot of people didn't expect that Denver was going to let him go. He was a restricted free agent. They'd offered him a qualifying offer. And then after some of their other moves, they pulled the qualifying offer on Saturday and the Bucks swooped in on Sunday and got him. So I think that's, you know, and from what I understand, like, you know, Craig was surprised by that. He was maybe a little hurt by that, that he thought he had a home in Denver and a team that wanted him. And suddenly they didn't want him anymore. And so he's going to come in with a chip on his shoulder. And this is the guy who could defend basically every position, and it has defended every position in the playoffs. He defended Donovan Mitchell, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James. He's defended Russell Westbrook. I think it was Snell Season on Twitter. Shout out to Snell Season, who posted a compilation of just Torrey Craig defensive highlights. And, you know, he absolutely wrecked a shot from Bogdan Bogdanovich, which I'm sure a lot of Bucks fans appreciate. But this guy can like do it all on the defensive end. And is there necessarily like a good fit when he's playing at the same time as Giannis and neither of them are 3-point threats? Yeah, that's not great offensively. But imagine an opposing team trying to score on Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Torrey Craig, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Brooke Lopez. Like that is as tough of a defensive lineup as you can get. I mean, Giannis is defensive player of the year. Brooke, you know, second team all defense. Drew Holiday is a former all defensive player. Middleton's no slouch, and Torrey Craig is an absolute animal. So if you have all those guys out there, the ability to, you know, to lock teams up, to embrace switching, I wonder if Buck Bud will actually embrace switching. He's been very resistant to switching. They love doing their drop scheme. Maybe we'll see more switching this year where they'll try it in the regular season and actually like get competent in it before they have to use it in the playoffs. Just having a versatile, switchable, strong lineup like that is good. And I think that, you know, the Bucks are in a good situation defensively when they can have Craig on the floor. And that's good also just for the possibilities that it creates in playoff situations where Middleton doesn't have to guard the team's best wing, or Holiday doesn't have to switch over and guard the team's best wing. They can or Giannis. Like, they can have Torrey Craig do that, even if it hampers their offense a little bit, just because if the other team can't score, like, that'll give the Bucks opportunities to get out in transition maybe and create offense that way. So I think for getting it for the minimum, that's, I think it's just a really good signing. That would be my take on that. Bobby Portis, I think he's good. He's fine. He'll play a lot of backup center. He can play power forward. He can shoot the three really well. I assume that, you know, as has been the case the whole time Bud has been in Milwaukee, guys will shoot threes. Like, Bobby Portis will be encouraged to shoot threes. And anything else that's part of his game, he probably won't do as much. Like, there won't be a ton of, like, just random mid-range jumpers that you know, maybe you do more when you play for the Knicks or the Wizards or the Bulls. Like, he's gonna space, he's gonna shoot threes, he's gonna rebound hard, and they're gonna try and get him to play, you know, better, stronger defense in their scheme. He can play either next to Brook Lopez or next to Giannis Antetokounmpo. He could play without either of those guys, just be kind of a, you know, the team's second unit center. So I think that he's somebody who within the Bucks system can fit. He isn't necessarily like, I don't think I'm excited about Bobby Portis, but I think, especially relative to their players, but I think that he can fit. He can bring something. I think he's better than what they had gotten in the past from Marvin Williams and Ersan Ilyasova. At least he has the possibility of being better, definitely younger. And so we'll have to see how he pans out. I'm interested in these rookies, Jordan Wara and Sam Merrill. You know, the Bucks put a premium on shooting during the draft, and these two guys, from everything that I've read and looked up, these guys are considered to be some of the elite shooters in the draft. I know I've seen comparisons for Merrill to Duncan Robinson, and if you
yes, please,
if that could be the case, then that's good. If he could be like Matt Thomas, that's good. Like, if you have a guy who can shoot and shoot consistently and shoot well, both off the dribble and catch and shoots, because like at Utah State, he wasn't just like a catch and shoot guy. He had the ball in his hands, was coming off screens, shooting off the dribble.
He was the offense at Utah State. He was a stud.
Yeah. And so if that can all translate, that's a really good value at the 60th pick. Jordan Wara, I mean, at 45, this is a guy who's also another older, polished, like, 3-point shooter with some size and some length. He'll have, you know, I think he'll have opportunities to contribute. I wonder, you know, with the dearth of players in the front court, is DJ Wilson going to play more, or are they going to, you know, maybe go smaller and then maybe Wara gets some chances, or Merrill gets some chances, or whatever. Like, there might be some possibilities there. I don't know how Bud's going to do all of this, but it seems like during the regular season they can tinker around and see what they have and see who might be able to most help them come playoff time, because that's really when you need guys to help. It doesn't matter if you're the one seed in the East. We've seen that 2 years in a row. So I think the Bucks are starting to take that to heart, or maybe they have taken it to heart, and say, okay, let's just figure out the regular season. Let's get through it. Let's see what we got. Let's see who we have. And then once the playoffs come, let's tighten up and let's go. I mean, I think that's what a lot of fans would hope and expect.
It's funny to me, Utah State, for some reason in Wisconsin sports circles, you get Jordan Love, the first round draft pick for the Packers, Sam Merrill, who could be contributing as a draft pick, Gary Anderson, if you want to flash back to the Wisconsin Badgers situation. I don't know what it is, but there seems to be some sort of pipeline. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see those guys, the role they play. You know, will the Bucks? They didn't expect to have Dante DiVincenzo back, and now he is. So that's an opportunity that they might be able to take advantage of. And, you know, we mentioned that could be a trade thing down the line, or he could develop into a pretty special player in his third year. It's maybe the jury's out on him a little bit. But back to what we've seen from other teams, the Lakers appear to have built just this unstoppable juggernaut. I think going into this past season, the Bucks were, you know, we maybe could have thought that was their year. This was the season for them to win the whole thing. Kevin Durant was hurt, so the Nets weren't, you know, quite at full speed. The Lakers were certainly a top flight contender, but you know, you figured LeBron's getting old. Maybe his time has passed. Clearly it's never going to pass. He's going to be a star into his 50s. And now the Lakers are just loaded up. So I don't think the Bucks will be seen as the favorite at all to win this whole thing by any means. What about in the East? Are they the best team in the East?
I think it's to be determined. I think that when you look at the other teams in the East, I don't know that Toronto got better. I don't know that Boston got better, but I think the Heat have at least stayed consistent to where they were, and obviously that was a problem for the Bucks. I think that the Sixers are in a position where they could be significantly better. I think that by getting Daryl Morey this offseason, that might be their biggest pickup in a long time. There's just a certain level of like competency and direction and like focus that is there. I think that I know on draft night, all the moves that they were making, I thought, wow, this team is going to be really good. And I think that having Doc Rivers, who is an accomplished coach, and having Daryl Morey and having just kind of this like consistent, like, vertical consistency, whatever it is, like they're all vertical alignment. I think that's what it is. I don't understand.
That's very corporate speak of you.
Yeah, I'm not very corporate, so the fact that I bungled that is not a surprise. but having that kind of vertical alignment, and having some new voices in the room, and kind of some new energy in the building, I think that'll be good. I think they'll play a more efficient style than they have in the past, and I think it'll make them. I think they'll be optimized. Like, we've been waiting for the 76ers to be optimized for years, and it just has never happened. And so now is this the year with the new pieces they have in place, both on the court, on the bench, in Doc Rivers and in the front office? Like, could now be the time? I think it could be. So they'll be more of a challenge. I mean, like I said, I don't know that the Raptors or Celtics were better, but they're still really good. And we haven't even mentioned the Nets yet. And they're going to have Kyrie and KD, and they're going to have that whole team together. So the East is a lot tougher. The Bucks, I think, would probably still be the betting favorites. I think that's the most recent Vegas odds that I've seen. But I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't as good in the regular season as they have been. But they might still be better come playoff time because they have a little bit more. Maybe talent at the top, or guys that you could rely upon at the top of their roster. Most namely, Drew Holiday.
This is going to be one of those pivoting what if moments. Bucks fans are going to be paying attention to what Bogdan Bogdanovic does all season long, whether it's with the Hawks or the Kings, because they'll be wondering how the divergence would be if he had been in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform. Reminds me of a deal the Brewers had locked down in 2015 to send Carlos Gomez to the Mets. That was famously called off because in the aftermath of one of the players breaking down in tears on TV, the Brewers turned around, were able to make a deal with Houston that landed them some pretty important players, Josh Hader, Adrian Hauser among them. It was a deal that worked out famously for Milwaukee. Got to wonder if that's what happened here. John Horst was able to turn around, was able to build a roster that is seemingly better than what they had before, maybe keeping them afloat on top of the Eastern Conference. But I feel like none of it matters if the guy who's currently hanging out in Greece singing songs on Twitter and Instagram, if he doesn't sign on the dotted line, everything sort of starts to fall away. So that'll be something we'll be watching here in the next couple weeks, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's all we'll be watching, right?
Yep, for sure.
That's all we'll be interested in. While we were on this podcast, it looks like what we all expected has been completed. The Pelicans announced that the four-way trade is done. And so Drew Holiday and Sam Merrill are officially on the Bucks, as we expected.
There we go. Also, also that Pat Connaughton's contract is a third-year player option. That's how his contract will shake out. That's what I saw during this podcast.
Woof. Okay. So, well, if we go back to Pat Connaughton stuff, that looks a lot worse.
Yeah, that's not good.
If you know, having a three-year, $60 million deal where basically all of it's guaranteed, your player option means that you're on the hook for it, whether you want it or not. that's less good. If it was a third year, non-guaranteed or third year team option, then maybe that would, be a little bit more positive in the Bucks direction. But good for Pat. Pat's getting paid. Good for him. Less good for the Bucks. Doesn't really bode well. Who knows if Giannis said, "Hey, I want my workout buddy, Pat Connaughton, to be with me the whole time." I have no idea. But those details of that deal coming to fruition or coming to light now, I will go back onto my Pat Connaughton comments and say I like this deal a lot less, and I think it doesn't reflect as well for the Bucks. Even still not knowing all the details, my opinion of it is lower.
Yeah. Well, we will obviously we will have to see. We'll be in touch again soon, Matt, so we can maybe we'll be talking about a Supermax on the next podcast. We'll do one in a week and see if there are any changes to the landscape. Thanks for joining me, man. We'll talk again very soon.